next. And we welcome you to the Wednesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And for the next hour, we're going to be talking about some of the really interesting and intriguing challenges that have confronted high school choral directors here in southeastern Wisconsin. And we're going to be hearing from three of them in all. The first will be Elizabeth Stege, who is the director of choral activities at Tremper High School in Racine. Later on, we'll hear from Polly Amborn from Tremper High School in Kenosha, and after that, Derek Mahan from Waterford High School. And they are just, in a sense, the tip of a large iceberg of many choral music instructors, not just here in Wisconsin, but all over the country, for that matter, all over the world, who have had to try to figure out how to do high school choral music during this COVID-19 pandemic and how to do it safely. And it's been done in a lot of different ways and over all kinds of various obstacles. So I'm glad we can have this conversation. It is a follow-up of sorts to the conversation I had last week with two area collegiate choral conductors, Dr. Kinchin at UW-Parkside and Dr. Garcia Novelli at Carthage. And again, Liz Stege, to begin, from Case High School, we welcome you back to the morning show.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me.
I'm glad we can have this conversation. So first, I want you to briefly touch on the spring and what it was like for you and your other colleagues at Case High School and your counterparts at other schools when kind of the curtain of COVID-19 came sort of ringing down on all of us here in the Midwest in mid-March. What did you have to do, in a sense? What sorts of plugs did you have to pull? What doors got shut right in the midst of everything?
Right. Well, it did really change. It almost seemed like the whole country came to a halt. And because of that, I feel like Case High School and Racine Unified and my choir program all came to a halt on what is happening, what are we going to do. And as far as, of course, what happened is everything needed to stop. And what we could do at that point with students and with each department, what we could do with students. And like I think you mentioned, it spring is very different than this fall. But as far as spring is concerned, a lot of disappointment of ending of the year cancellations. And that's our end of the year concert where all the seniors are acknowledged and thanked for their hard work and for the differences between their freshman and the senior year. And we had to find some different ways to congratulate them and notice them. And we did it through video, Zoom meetings, and acknowledging our students. We did it by sharing on Facebook all of our seniors. Of course, it was different and not the same, but we did what we could. And I think everyone really tried to stay positive, especially for those that really did struggle with the negativity of it all. Why during my senior year? Why? Well, we just have to think of the opportunities we are able to do. And in some ways, they got a start in things that the freshmen this year didn't get a start of. So there's always pros and cons. There's always a way to look at. And I think overall, students try to stay positive.
Mm. Glad to hear that. You know, it's one thing when those of us who are 50, 60, 70 years old and are kind of looking back over a whole lifespan, 9 months of something being taken away doesn't seem like a monumentally big deal, but when you're maybe a 16 or a 17 or an 18 year old, and particularly when this falls at the end of your senior year, I mean, that really is monumental for a young person's life. And we probably should not be minimizing the kind of pain that this probably represented for them.
Absolutely. The whole experience, I think, was humbling for everyone. I think for teachers and for students alike, I think it was a very humbling experience and a time of reflection that, you know, I think now we are thinking back and appreciate a lot more, right? Mm.
So in the spring, once everything kind of stopped in terms of in-person instruction, did you end up trying to do some kind of virtual choir rehearsals with your choral ensembles, or did you have to just drastically reshape what those groups did in the end of the spring semester?
I drastically reshaped everything. I don't know how successful I was. I kept on giving opportunities to students as far as the state solo ensemble contest that students could still participate in. I tried to share music and things to work on. I made a lot of recordings and things for students to continue practicing. But as far as a choir concert and everyone singing together, I was not successful at that. And I didn't even, it's not that I didn't try or want to, but I just didn't have the know-how of even how to attempt how to make some of that work. So it was a humbling experience for me as well, because I did not want to let students down. And I did what I could. And if that was enough, probably not, but I sure tried.
Sure. I think you're speaking for a lot of us who found ourselves confronted with challenges and questions that have never been a part of our teaching lives.
Right.
Over the summer, you had to, of course, anticipate the fall, and a fall unlike any other fall semester you've ever faced as a teacher. What kinds of thinking did you do over the summer, and what kinds of plans did you lay for this fall semester?
Oh, there was so much work that Racine Unified gave to us as far as how to teach online. And as we got that information and as we got those trainings, I was trying to apply music in my classroom the whole time. I really felt like I grew this summer as far as technology goes. I can't believe how much I learned. And that's someone in their 50s that never thought that was them. And I also had the opinion, too, that music was supposed to be performed in person. And I even electric keyboards and things, not always a big fan for me for performing, but I really changed my tune because I was naive to it. And I learned a lot and found ways that a keyboard in performing is so useful. Mm-hmm. And also singing is so useful. I really learned to communicate with students more one-on-one and what I can do with that. And it does take a little bit more work, but it is definitely worth it. There are definitely pros and cons to virtual learning, and I have really been stimulated and happy with the successes of students learning online.
I think you're speaking for a lot of teachers again, in that when you're faced with a strange situation like this and with a lot of restrictions, it gets you thinking about what is most essential. you end up weighing your priorities and this and that. Just to clarify for our listeners, because of course many of them don't live in Racine, Racine Unified has been virtual the entire fall. Is that correct?
The whole time. And I do appreciate that, because we were able to prepare towards knowing that outcome. And I didn't have to be wishy-washy on, well, I could do this or I could do that. I really was forced to know that I would be teaching online. And I really took as a responsibility, I wanted students to have a place where they could be doing things musically and performing, and it was all going to be done through virtual learning.
There was a clarity about that that I know for other school districts was not necessarily the case, trying to maybe kind of play at both sides of the fence or
and I have a lot of respect for those people, because I emotionally, it would have been really tough for me. It was already emotionally tough for me because I don't like to let students down. And I'm sure a lot of other teachers feel the same way. And I really appreciate that I could just focus on making this happen and learn so I could be able to teach.
So I know none of us has a perfect crystal ball, but of course, 2021 is shaping up to be more positive than 2020 in relation to COVID, with the development of vaccines and, of course, their eventual dissemination, although just exactly when and how all that will happen remains to be seen, and how that's going to impact the school year remains to be seen as well. Do you have some sense that there might be a possibility before the end of this current school year, some point in the spring, that you may be able to be meeting with your singers once again in person?
I do. I do think that is a strong possibility. I'm excited about that possibility. And I think that I have been influenced that even if that happens, there's some things that I will be still adding technical-wise to my in-person teaching as well. Like I said, there is some major pluses, and I can add that to strategies to my in-person as well.
Well, that's great. I mean, that sounds like yet another silver lining in what otherwise has not been all that silvery a situation. The fact that that those of us who are teachers of music are finding ourselves needing new strategies to contend with all this. And some of those strategies can probably live on even when so much of this COVID reality is just a sad memory. And, and I'm sure you hope in particular that when we come to the end of the school year, that you'll be able to recognize your seniors in person in the way that you've been accustomed to all these many years.
Absolutely. And if I could just add the two main pros of what has happened in virtual teaching music is that students are getting more confident online because they are learning to present themselves and not have to compete with other people right next to them. I also think as a singer, they are learning to hear their voice and appreciate their own voice and not their voice mixed with someone next to them. And that is really interesting. And I think personal self-esteem building. And I think students really need that right now.
Wow. That's very, very good. A thought that I had not even thought about. So I really appreciate that and everything else you've shared in this conversation. Elizabeth Stege, who is the director of choral activities at Case High School in Racine, part of the Racine Unified School District. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for your good work. And thanks for being part of the morning show today.
All right.
You're listening to the morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. And for part two of today's program, we're going to continue our focus on trying to do choral music safely during the restrictions of COVID-19. And we're going to hear a very different story from a counterpart of Liz Stege's right down the road, namely Polly Amborn, who is the director of choral activities at Tremper High School in the Kenosha Unified School District. And my sister-in-law, as a matter of fact, but we're not talking to her today because of that, but because she, like her peers with the Kenosha Unified School District, have contended with a situation in the Kenosha schools that has been much more complicated than the situation in Racine, which has been pretty much all virtual. Kenosha has undertaken more of a hybrid approach that has been complicated, to say the very least. And Polly Amborn is just one of a number of teachers who've been contending with these complexities. And she's going to be talking with us for the next few minutes about what this semester has been like. Polly Amborn, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Good to be talking to you. So maybe you could first of all summarize what the fall semester was looking like for the Kenosha Unified School District, what decisions had been made, and maybe even a little bit about kind of the timetables under which these decisions were made about how the fall semester was going to be handled.
Well, we were at the beginning of August, we thought we were going to be full virtual. And then we had a little window when we were when they decided that we would be now a hybrid approach. And so we had some time to try to prepare for that. But it looked different even from the middle schools to the high schools. Middle school music programs had one class that was virtual and one class that was in person. And that's how they planned their days. Where at the high school levels, we were doing a hybrid, which was some students would be at home, some students would be in the room with us, and we would be teaching them at the exact same time. And so that's how we started the school year. And then we would, you know, move forward, but as we started to see the year happen, we ended up with students getting quarantined and numbers started to change very drastically, you know, depending on the day, depending on the week. It was really quite different.
Mm. Talk for a moment about the challenge of, for instance, doing a choir rehearsal in this hybrid format in which some of your students are in the room and some of them are at home and connecting, I assume, via Zoom or something like Zoom. What is that like for you as the teacher with a situation like that? And is that anything you've ever had to contend with before?
No, I've said multiple times that it feels like the hardest thing I've ever done because I felt like I was honestly ignoring half of my students no matter what I did. If I was responding to and reacting to the students in the room, which was second nature and what I'd been doing my whole career, then I felt like I was ignoring my students at home. But if I was, you know, peering into the camera and trying to talk to the students at home, I felt like the kids that were in the room were kind of being shortchanged. And we had the huge obstacle of the lag that happens just naturally when you connect via whatever platform, Zoom, Google Meet, which is what Kenosha uses. And so while I would, you know, something maybe good was happening in the in-person rehearsal and we'd all be, oh, that was great. And I'd say to the kids at home, how was that? And they're like, well, it was kind of glitchy. We couldn't, you know, and so the whole celebration of, you know, something sounding good was kind of lost many times. And it wasn't anybody's fault. It was just the nature of the beast.
Right. At the beginning of the fall semester, what kind of numbers are we talking about? For instance, with your chorale, which is in a sense your upperclassmen, your top group in terms of difficulty of music and so on, and a mixed ensemble. What kind of numbers are we talking about in terms of singers at home versus singers in the room with you? And then how drastically did those numbers begin to change, and what caused those changes?
When I began the year, it was a class of 60. I had 44 in the room. Well, we had to have class in the upper gym because I couldn't fit 44 people in my choir room with any chance of decent spacing. So fortunately, the wrestling season hadn't begun yet. So we set up in the upper gym. But I had 44 singers, and we had a pretty good balance. And then I had 16 students at home. And so we were up in the upper gym for a while. And then there was the realization from a number of the athletes that if someone got quarantined, they couldn't come to sports practice, and they couldn't be in that meet or that game or that match until they were out of quarantine. And that started to happen pretty quickly. And all of a sudden I started seeing people just drop out from in-person to virtual because their coaches, you know, said, listen, you can't play if you're quarantined. And so it just really started to trickle down. We ended up being about 30 in person, and then more, you know, as the cases got worse and the severity got worse. And certainly I didn't ask any student, why are you changing? You know, just their name just moved from one list to the other and they weren't in my room anymore. But now I'm at about 25 in person, if we're ever back in person again, and 35 at home.
Hmm. And just to be clear, when you're talking about athletes, you're meeting in the upper gym, but we're not talking about members of the wrestling team necessarily. You're talking about athletes singing in your choir.
Correct.
And the fact that their situation in terms of being able to play their sport, whatever it is, would be compromised if they were exposed to COVID and had to quarantine. And so they're making these decisions. I think you pointed out to me the irony of that, given the fact that it was thanks at least in part to some really fervent lobbying from athletes and their parents to try to do at least some of the fall semester in person. That's why the situation was created as it is. And then ultimately, a lot of these athletes have found it impossible or not advisable to remain in person themselves.
Right. And I mean, it was one of those things where honestly, you know, was saying to them, I understand, I said, I never want you to feel bad. I had a day where I said, I'm disappointed in the situation, but I'm not disappointed in you. Hmm. Because they have to make the decision that's best for them. And so many, you know, have said, I really want to be there. I really want to be in school, but I can't, you know, take the chance of missing out on my entire season because I'm the quarterback. Or I'm, you know, the starter on this thing, or I mean, just so many various things that I knew were happening, and just had to go with it.
Right. So these students are caught in a really unhappy situation where they're having to make some choices that are difficult, and whatever the choice is, it represents a loss. So for your students, then, what does choir feel like when you're not working towards a standard performance or a standard public concert, where under typical circumstances, that's a big part of why you're meeting and the goal towards which you're heading. I suspect that even beyond all the kind of technical challenges, this had to feel really different because of that.
Very much so. And I mean, at the beginning of the year, I said to the students, well, we're gonna learn music like we always have, and we're gonna try to do some sort of recording that would be, you know, us singing what we were and presenting it to families. And the plan was that we would do it perhaps after school hours. So if there were virtual students that could partake and want to join us, that they could, so they would feel part of the process. And that was definitely the plan for quite a while. And then I was even to the point of starting to get things in place with videotape and trying to figure out dates or, you know, someone to video for us. And then I myself was quarantined. And so all of a sudden I was not with my students and could not hear them at all. Because when you're teaching virtually, the students have to have their microphones off. And so I have not been with my students since November 4th. And so when you're looking at trying to do a video the first week in December and you aren't hearing one thing for weeks, the idea of that just really didn't make good sense. And so I, you know, had to say to the kids, we really can't do this. And so many of them now, with so much shutting down and so many cases spiking, many of them that maybe would have been wanting to come in or their families allowing them to come in just can't. So we're looking at some new music and trying to keep the first pieces from the beginning of the year alive and touching back on those now and then. But we're just having to move forward because you don't want to keep working on the same music for months on end, not even really knowing what it sounds like either. So that's kind of how we're working it for now.
Now, in addition to your choirs at Tremper, you also collaborate with your counterparts at Bradford and Indian Trails on the famous Madrigal Singers, who typically, but at this time of year, are gearing up for Ye Olde English Christmas Feast. Explain to our listeners the extent to which this work has actually gone forward this fall semester.
Well, our committee met in August and, or maybe July. And, you know, we said, what is the priority? And the priority isn't the feast, the food. It's not the set. It's not the costumes. It's not the pageantry. It's giving the students the opportunity to perform and be together if they possibly could. And so once some decisions were made from the school board and sports was happening with practices, we were given the go-ahead to have evening ensemble practices. So we decided to do it, and we met on a much abbreviated schedule. Usually we would rehearse about 6 hours a week in the evening, and we were down to an hour and a half. Normally we would learn about 23 songs or so. This year we learned about six. And we just wanted to try to do something.
Was the limitation of time directly because of COVID and the concerns about the longer you sing together, the more exposure there is, or were there other factors that also limited the rehearsal time?
No, it was pretty much that. We had to keep the kids, of course, spaced and wearing masks, but also, you know, it's just, you can't be in one room singing that long and feel super safe about it. Plus it's just really taxing for singers to be in rehearsals with those masks on and so far apart, because it's just, you can't hear. And so we knew that making music with masks being spaced was hard enough as it was, and we didn't want the experience to be anything less than positive. So we kept it pretty brief, and I think for the most part it was pretty positive.
Right. And you and I will have a follow-up conversation sometime in the next few days with a couple other participants, collaborators in the Ye Olde English Christmas Feast, which is still going to be offered to the community, and roughly about when?
It'll be open on December 19th, and there will be a few things around that that we can talk about. But yeah, we're 1 weekend later than we normally would have been.
I understand completely. I think most people will understand completely. So at the moment, you're entirely virtual. What is your sense? Have you been given any hints whatsoever about what the remainder of the school year is going to look like? And given what I'm sure is mostly uncertainty, how does one plan?
Well, we are, you know, supposedly everyone that was in person can come back on January 11th. Now, who knows, you know, where that may happen. And so we know we do not have a choral festival this year, which is heartbreaking for so many of the kids, because that was a big event where they all got to come together. And so many of them have shared through conversations that that was when they were younger, you know, what got fueled their desire to keep singing either, you know, in middle school or high school. Some of them were in all city choir and began that, you know, when they were in fourth or fifth grade and saw those big kids wearing tuxedos and thought, oh, I want to do that. And so it's a huge, you know, blow, but we don't have that. So, you know, if we end up coming back in person with the students that are that way, you know, maybe we'll see how it goes and try to record some of the music we've been working on. Otherwise, we are getting ready for the end of the semester. And so there's, you know, getting final exams and all that together. And then, you know, I think we just kind of know that after a point, we're about as far as we can get on the pieces, and maybe we just need to start looking at something different. I personally am not doing the virtual choir thing. I just feel like there's so many technology things that I'm not well versed enough in that we would have all the students record themselves and send me something and put that out there, and the cost of that and the time involved and the frustration involved, at least right now, is not something that I'm wanting to pursue.
Well, this has been an interesting and intriguing challenge, I know, for you and for all your counterparts, and particularly for teachers in the Kenosha Unified School District. This has not been easy in any way. So I really appreciate you taking the time to share honestly about what this has been like. And, of course, we wish you only the very best as you and your students move forward, and hopefully at some point in 2021 to a somewhat more normal year where we can, more normal world where we can enjoy music together as we've been accustomed. Polly Amborn is the director of the choirs at Tremper High School. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Greg.
By the way, after we finished up our interview, Polly Amborn explained the one example of how complicated and sometimes frustrating this fall semester has been. Her aforementioned self-quarantine began on, I believe, November 4th. She was back at Tremper in the building for the first time for a staff development day on Friday the 13th. But by that following Monday, when she should have seen her students again in person for the first time, escalating COVID numbers forced Tremper to go all virtual, and they have been virtual ever since. Again, Polly Amborn leads the choirs at Tremper High School in Kenosha. You're listening to the Wednesday Morning Show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg, and here's part three. And to finish out our morning show today, we move to a third high school choral director in the area, namely Derek Mahan, who is the choir director at Waterford Union High School. And it works out very nicely because we're going to really end up hearing about three very different scenarios in terms of how high schools and choral programs are contending with COVID-19 and all of the complications which it brings. So, Derek Mahan, we welcome you to the morning show. Thank you for making time for this interview.
Good morning. Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate you taking the time.
So, just so you're aware, Derek, in part one, I spoke with Elizabeth Stege from Case High School, and they have essentially been all virtual. I spoke after that with Polly Amborn at Tremper High School, and they have been in kind of a simultaneous mix of in-person and virtual. And Waterford is yet a third scenario. It's also a mix, a hybrid, but set up in a very different way. So I want to talk about that. First of all, can you take us briefly back to the spring and when this curtain of COVID-19 descended? What did that mean for you and for your singers at Waterford Union High School?
Oh boy. Well, we had obviously, like everyone else around the country, we started getting this wave of things might be canceled, and then very quickly things became canceled. We actually had a trip to Walt Disney World planned for our music program over spring break, and our parents had, they said, let's go, and then all of a sudden it became very quickly obvious that that was not going to be a possibility. Serendipity involved itself a little bit because we made the decision that we weren't going to go. And that very afternoon/evening is when Walt Disney World announced that they were closing. Wow. So we avoided a lot of public firestorm, because I think if we had made that decision without that happening, we would have parents wanted to continue on and just not knowing what all was involved.
So the decision was made for you by Walt Disney World.
Essentially, it would have been made eventually anyways. Yeah. I remember we were, it was Thursday, March 12th. And we had just opened up our musical. We did 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. And we had our opening night, and word started coming through that we were going to be closed as of that Monday, the 16th. And what did that mean for our musical? And I had some discussions with our administration. We happened to have a split cast in that one cast was performing Thursday, the other one was performing Friday and switching off for Saturday and then Sunday. And we wanted to try and make sure that everyone had an opportunity to perform. So they were originally going to shut us down on Friday, and we convinced them to let us go one more night. In hindsight, who knows how wise that was, but it is what it is. But those kids had that chance to perform and actually had kind of a way of closing down and just knowing that that was going to be the last performance they had. That was the last performance that happened in our school, Friday, March 13th. Wow. And so we have not had a choral performance in our school since then. And then in the spring, we attempted to do some virtual choir things. I opted not to do the visual aspect of things, and we just did an audio recording. So kids had recorded themselves, and I compiled them into an audio performance, and that went okay. But as everyone knows, getting the kids to be motivated at that time is a challenge. Mm-hmm. And just the uncertainty of what was going to happen, and kids like, oh, this isn't the same. We don't want to do it. And yeah, it isn't the same, but just trying to forge ahead. So that's what happened in the spring. And then we arrived into the fall. And all of the decisions of, are we going back? Aren't we going back? Are we going virtual? Are we going hybrid? What are we going to do? And at first, our school district, we decided to be a hybrid model, and meaning A through K attends one day, L through Z the next. And what we had done for those first 2 weeks was, those that were in person, we held classes and did things like that. Those that were at home on that particular day, they had an alternate assignment to do, an alternate learning model that was not necessarily in sync with what was going on. It was separate, if that makes sense. And after 2 weeks, they said, no, let's get everyone back in the building. So we went full on everybody in person for another couple of weeks. And I don't remember exactly how many weeks it was. I want to say it was somewhere about 3 or 4 weeks.
And Derek, that we had. Derek, and are you saying that the determination was made that this particular kind of hybrid system was not working very well for the students?
It was not working very well for the students. At that point in time, we had not seen very many cases in our school. So the school board had decided, you know what, we should give it a go, and got everyone in the building. Now we have just over 1,000 students in our building. And so social distancing was a challenge. I mean, it was possible. As far as our music classes, that was it was possible for us, mainly because we could go into our auditorium. We're fortunate to have an auditorium. And we were able to space the students out. I'm still rehearsing in our auditorium. And so I have kids that they have 6 feet of space in all directions. And so we're really mitigating that. And we have some resonance singers masks that we use when they sing. We'll get into that in just a second. But yeah, so we were able to rehearse in the auditorium, even as the school was in full. But our numbers started to rise. And at one point in time, we had almost 300 students out, not necessarily with COVID, but because they were quarantined and because of the contact tracing that was going on. So we had a third of our students that were at home. And so then the decision was made, okay, we should go back to a hybrid model, but we're going to go into what is called a synchronous model. So, and that's what we are in currently. And we are in this until the end of the semester, that A through K is in session today, and L through Z is at home, but they are tapping into classes virtually. Each student has a Chromebook. Each student has access to the internet. Those that didn't have internet service at home, the school district provided hotspots so they could get logged in. So every student has access to what's going on. We really wanted to make sure that that playing field was equaled, because that is one of the biggest challenges with all of this, is making sure that everyone has equal access to the education. So again, we're fortunate to be in that situation that we were able to make that happen. So that's kind of how we've been operating. We alternate every, alternate days. So again, today A through K is here, L through Z is at home. Tomorrow they'll flip flop, and we just continue on.
You end up seeing all of your students, or just about all of them? I'm assuming if a parent really felt strongly that they did not want their student in person, that there is some possibility of a parent making that choice or not.
Yes, there is. And at semester, they'll be able to make that choice again and how they want to proceed. We have partnered with a program called JEDI. It is an online school option. And so technically, the students are enrolled at Waterford High School, but they attend their online classes through JEDI, and they're not in the building at all. I don't see them on my roster. Unless that we actually do have provision that if they decide to do JEDI, they can take up to two classes in the building if they want to get those electives like choir or art, home ec, tech ed, some of those hands-on things that you just can't get through virtual learning. So we have that provision. And I do have a couple of students who are doing their core academics in JEDI, and then they're with me as one class that they come in for. And again, they come in every other day. They're online virtually the other day. And really, for me, for rehearsing, the hardest thing really is trying to keep it as normal as possible. We still rehearse, but it's only half of the group. I never see a full group. We never get a full group sound to hear what the choir sounds like. And I've heard from a number of kids that they just really, one of the great things about choir is the community and the bonds that they make and of singing together and creating that music together. And they're just not feeling it as strong because they're separated by distance and they're separated by, you know, by the hybrid model that we are in. So there are a lot of students that are just struggling with that connection. And so you just have to be intentional and try and do it. And so I'm trying to make things as normal as possible. For my classes, I basically just broadcast a rehearsal. And the expectation is that they're singing at home and that they are participating as best to their ability, just as they would in person. And the hardest part for me is I have to trust that they're doing what they need to at home. But the proof comes in projects like we're doing right now. We're finishing up a virtual program. I think I'm probably a little bit insane sometimes because I think, okay, we could do this. And then I get in the middle of it and it's, this is the hardest thing I have ever had to do. I've been teaching for 23 years and keeping the kids motivated and keeping them on and saying, hey, you can do it. And it just, it's been so much more so than any other year and they're doing it, but it's tough for them. And the tough part is that, for our project, they had to audio record themselves because we have a program, that's, an online platform where they can record themselves. And then they have to video record themselves doing the same thing. And then we merge those for this concert. And the insane part, there are groups that have done that, but the insane part is usually they only do a piece or two. I had in my mind that we were going to do a full concert. So each student has seven songs. it was a little overwhelming, but did it.
And now you are taking all of these recordings So several hundred choral students all together, I'm assuming.
Yep.
Six or seven songs a piece. And you yep. are having to put all of these recordings together one by one. And then once you've done that, I suppose, balancing and yes. so on.
Yep. Partially. Yes. So the answer to that is partially. So what I'm doing is I'm taking their audio that they've done in the online program, and I have to go in and make sure that it's all aligned. I download that, and then I've actually hired a company out of Appleton called Pinnacle Audio, and they are compiling these for me. So they're going to combine the audio and the visual. That is a talent that I do not possess. I can do the audio stuff, but the audio and the visual, that is well beyond my capabilities. And so we've hired them, but yeah, so just making sure that, the students have submitted them, that they've labeled them correctly so that when they put them together, it's a smooth process for that audio company. But yeah, over the weekend, I went through some 800 audio tracks, and a little over 600 video tracks. The video tracks are still trickling in. As we speak. So it's an ongoing process. And in total, yeah, I spent quite a bit of time this weekend. On Saturday, it was about 16 hours. On Sunday, it was another 13 hours.
Wow.
And then tomorrow we have musical auditions. Oh. So we are forging ahead.
Wow. So for something like that, then, the musical will happen in sort of an in-person but distanced format?
Correct. We're kind of approaching it the same way in a hybrid type of a model. I give all the credit in the world to our drama director. Her name is Lee Birmingham. And back when all of this was really starting to hit, she did her fall play. They did a production of Little Women. And they started rehearsals in August. And she really forged the way to figure out how do we hold rehearsals and do blocking and choreography and all that fun stuff in a distanced manner so that kids are spaced out. There are no more than 12 at a rehearsal. And that's so that, again, they can remain spaced out. And so, you know, people are tapping in at home and rehearsing at home while rehearsals happening on stage. So we've been kind of working with that model. She just did another show last week. They did a radio show, but with a live audience. So we had about 120 people in the audience that were distance in our auditorium, and we were able to do a show. So we've been trying things in little increments to see if they work. Yeah. And so we think we've found a way to make this work. We're doing Rodgers and Hammerstein's Carousel. And so auditions are this week, and we're figuring out how to do auditions in a distance manner, in a safe manner. And we're trying to forge ahead and just taking a lot of not only the CDC and Racine County Health Department guidelines, but also looking at some of those NFHS studies on how aerosols are dispersed in the air and taking those into consideration.
Hmm. Well, we certainly hope that some semblance of normalcy will return at some point in 2021. And in the meantime, it's great to hear about the innovative things that are happening at Waterford Union High School to try to deliver as meaningful a musical education and education in general to your students there. Derek Mahan, director of the choirs at Waterford Union High School, I really appreciate you making time for this. I know you had a ferociously busy weekend with the project you were telling us about and with everything stretching ahead of you. Thanks for making time for the morning show today. Best wishes to you.
Thank you so much.
Tomorrow's morning show was supposed to feature an interview with Angela Zimmerman, who is the new librarian, or head of the Racine Public Libraries, but unfortunately she has had to postpone our conversation. We will be recording a conversation next week instead. So tomorrow on the morning show, out of the archives, a conversation with psychotherapist Amy Sprague-Champeau talking about depression. And certainly this is a very real presence in the lives of all kinds of people and more people than ever during this COVID-19 pandemic.